What goes on behind the scenes in Pacific politics and how does it affect us? Polytalk is back to unpack the big questions like, why is no one talking about PNG's political refugee crisis?
I can't even call it an election. It was something like a criminal tug war.
Join me, Scott Whitey, as I chat all things Pacific politics on Polytalk.
Search up Polytalk in your favorite podcast app to listen.
This is an ABC podcast.
When you take sensitive cultural idea and formalize it into law and applies it to all women that sell in those places, it also stops being culture and starts being discrimination.
It was very shocking for a lot of women because we had never been told that you are forbidden to participate in normal food preparation and selling.
This is something that we expected back in the 80s or the 70s. It's not something that we expected in this century.
People are shocked recently to learn that Shefa Provincial Government Council in Vanuatu had passed a bylaw banning women from handling or selling food during menstruation. The law threatened hefty fines and the loss of food stall permits for women who broke it, raising outrage in the community all the way up to Vanuatu's Prime Minister Jotham Naput. The reaction was so negative that it prompted the council to apologize and announce plans to revoke the law just days after it was passed. But has the damage been done? What does it say to women in the community when an all-male council passes a law without consultation, banning them from earning a living for 1 week each month? And where did the idea even come from? Is it a reflection of the taboo that still surrounds menstruation or the belief in some cultures that a woman's period can make a man sick? And if so, does that justify a modern-day council passing a law that would set women back? I'm Natasha Metten. Sisters, let's talk about this period ban. Let's begin with an outline of the issue. Lily Rose Wellwell has been following the story for the ABC, and she sat down with Egi Tupo from Pacific Beat to lay it all out.
The Prime Minister stepped in pretty quickly once the pilot started making waves. His message was really firm. This isn't the way to regulate people's livelihood. He made it clear that while provinces have authority to manage market and public access spaces, rules that directly restrict how women sell goods, especially women who rely on this vendors to survive, crosses a line. So he said basically that the pilot needed a rethink and that any regulation should be supported, should support communities and not make life harder for them. And when the country's leader uses the tone, it puts pressure on the provinces, on the provinces.
But not long afterwards, though, I believe Shefa Province, they made a statement about this sort of particular section in the bylaw. Like, what did they actually say? Was there an apology at least?
They shifted their position in the statement. They said that they are going to revoke that controversial clause in the bylaw, the one limiting sitting and selling in public spaces, and importantly, they issued an apology. And you could tell they recognized the scale of the backlash, and they also noted that it's also they didn't follow the processes to get their legal people to complete the processes and to get everybody involved and get the consultation on the bylaw before they pass it.
Mm. Lily Rose, what do you think was the change of heart then, you know, behind this whole statement by Shefa Province?
It's public pressure. There's a lot of people who were not in support of the pilot when it first came out and was made public. Public pressure, once the issue is on social media, things heated up. The women were outspoken, especially those who sell goods at the market, the non-government organizations, women. So but the combination of grassroots voices, civil society, and even politicians, including the Prime Minister, stepping in, making it impossible for Shefa Province to ignore.
Yeah, as you say, this issue would have created quite a public storm of controversy in Vanuatu. Can you maybe just take us through sort of what other sort of reactions there was? I know you did mention, probably rightly so, as a lot of women rights groups would have spoken up, right?
Yeah. And even, you know, women saying, the women trying to make a living, and why are they being pushed out? But they, he's heated conversation online with women selling at the roadsides and markets, where some of the first people who speak up, many of them rely on daily sales to survive. So the idea of being panned because of the period was just unthinkable. Some experts, including Vanuatu scholars, who said it's neither the pilo is neither custom nor Christianity, and calling it as a superstition that punishes poorest women, and they a lot of people resonated with that. Online and offline.
Mm. So again, are you saying that it was tied to culture and tradition? I mean, could you explain that a bit as to the reason for the section in the bylaw?
Yeah, so this is where the nuance came in. So the Shefa leaders actually said that the intention of the bylaw was to protect cultural norms around public spaces in many parts of the, in some places in Vanuatu, women who are on the period are not allowed to prepare food. And it is a sensitive time. And in certain villages, women traditionally won't handle food on or in the sacred places like Nakamas while they are on the period. These are quite family or village or traditional practices. It's not written laws, but people tend to follow that in some areas, and it's not all of Vanuatu. So the idea behind the clause didn't just come out of nowhere, but the custom isn't the same anywhere else in Vanuatu, mm-hmm. and those beliefs aren't universally across Vanuatu. They weren't designed to modern urban setting like Vanuatu. So that's where, you know, when you take sensitive cultural idea and formalize it into law and applies it to all women that sell in those places, it also stops being culture and starts being discrimination, because they're only targeting market vendors and women selling on the side roads. And people are questioning, if you want to do it like for culturally, then if you're using that excuse as culture, then apply to even restaurant and other takeaways and all that. Why just target, you know, women selling on the road?
Mm. I'm just wondering, how would they have even known who would be on their period? Do you know what I mean? Respectfully, for these women who are just market vendors, yes.
That was really heated online. And, you know, even women are like, so now you will have menstruation control offices. How would you know that women are actually on their periods? And, you know, there's no health or scientific proof to say that women on the period causes some health, you know, risk or something.
Yeah, seems very invasive. But Lily Rose, look, now that we've had sort of an apology, you know, and the particular section in the bylaw is being repealed, like, do we expect any more to then come out of this issue?
Yeah, so now they are going to follow the normal process. So on Friday, they have made the amendment and they have revoked that section in the bylaw. As per the regulations, they have to put up the notice for 15 days period where people have to have comments, and they can put their comments and they can be taken in and then being sent to the ministry and then to the state law before it can be recasseted.
That's reporter Lily Rose Wellwell speaking to Eggy Tupo on Pacific Beat.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
So where did the idea for this ban come from? Lily Rose touched on the custom that isn't practiced throughout Vanuatu that prevents women from serving food to men during menstruation. When Relvi Poilapa heard about the law, this custom was the first thing she thought of. Relvi is a representative of the NGO Voice Bloyumi in Vanuatu.
Originally, when the announcement was officially out on social media, I had already been informed by a colleague of mine of the official gazette. So obviously, I was shocked and surprised, specifically because although this is a custom that a lot of Ni Vanuatu women do adhere to and have practiced for generations, here, specifically in the province that I come from, Shefa province here in Port Vila, it was surprising because we are seen as a province that takes the lead when it comes to access to information, communication, resources, and the knowledge of the importance of hygiene, sanitation, practices or mechanisms that enable us to be able to, you know, have a good, improved well-being when it comes to our health. So it was very shocking for a lot of women because we had never been told that you are forbidden to participate in normal food preparation and selling. So yeah, it was a bit shocking and surprising because it was never an actual law. It's always a common practice, maybe in a home setting, but not in a setting where a lot of women make their livelihood from selling produce at the market or from preparing food. And so this was something that was sort of like seen as a setback. Like, why have we come to a point where this is now a law? What was the rationale behind that? So confusion, shock, and a little bit of feeling appalled because this is something that, you know, in this day and age shouldn't be something that we should be reverting back to.
And tell me about the actual custom and how women are treated as queens during menstruation.
Usually when a woman has become old enough to be able to menstruate, she will be told a lot of customary practices from her mothers, her aunts, or her grandmothers. And it's usually around the importance of, or the understanding that while you are bleeding, you are essentially unclean. So you have to be extra cautious as to the way that you uphold customary practices. And the most important one being that you should not be allowed to touch food when you're living in a household setting. Any male that's in the house, you are not allowed to prepare their food. You shouldn't touch their food. It is actually also seen as a way for you to rest. Yeah? So for the 5 to 7 days that you are menstruating, it will be the men that have to take up the responsibility of cooking and maintaining food in the home. And you as the mother or as a woman in the house can essentially just rest. And then that's the perception that is seen. And it's lovely to see it in that way. A lot of times women feel that, especially those who practice that quite actively, that's their opportunity to just relax and take a break and not have to worry about taking care of everybody's needs in the home. They just worry about themselves and other females in the house who aren't menstruating can pick up where they're not able to, or the men, if they're able to also cook for everybody, then they take up that responsibility.
Mm-hmm. And what was the community reaction to the bylaw?
I think there were a lot of mixed feelings. The reaction from women who are based here on Efate Island or from Shefa province very specifically were very angry and disappointed and appalled and, you know, not accepting of this because we've never had to be told that you are absolutely forbidden. And then there was a little bit of confusion too, I would say, because people were thinking, well, if it's a bylaw for our province, does that exclude women who are also in working in restaurants and cafes, services that are always ongoing? And so I think on the part of the women, that was the feelings and the emotions. On the part of men, there were a few men who were also quite appalled. So there was support from a few men who were, you know, stood by the fact that this shouldn't be made a bylaw. And how were you going to enforce such a bylaw? You know, that was one of the biggest questions that people also had in their minds. Are you going to be physically doing checks? Are you going to request, you know, a lady's menstrual calendar? All of those types of questions were sort of going around. But there were also men who actually were quite in favor of it and trying to influence social media with why it should be adhered to, why it was important, and, you know, basically sort of implying that this was beneficial for the men at large, which then took it away from the women who are like, well, how do we earn our income if this is our normal way of our livelihood, you know? So a lot of conversation, different people coming in with different perspectives, a lot of confusion.
And Relvi, you know, according to the Vanuatu Daily Post, the lawmakers have said they will insert a new clause that will guide women in preparing food, including provisions on clean packaging, protecting clothing, hygiene certificate, and high-risk food. What do you make of that focus on women in the guidance?
For the last few years, you know, Vanuatu has really stepped up in relation to food and safety trainings and policies. So that wasn't surprising. I think this new law was really to just reinforce it a little bit more.
Relvi, how taboo is it to discuss menstruation in Vanuatu?
In some provinces, it's very taboo. It's considered a sensitive topic, and so anything to do with the reproductive cycle and also women's bodies or men's bodies is sort of looked down on. So it was a challenge for some people to see that this was being openly discussed on such a public platform. But it's really important that conversations can be held, simply because there's a lot of common myths and misunderstandings around menstrual cycles. When a culture or a community continues to sort of suppress that vital information from being received by people who need it, it's like a barrier. So although it's been challenging, it's not something, I think slowly there's more work being done in people being able to have safe spaces where this can be openly talked about in a way that doesn't totally discredit the importance of custom and culture, but that it's important that information is received by the very people who need to be able to continue living their lives with dignity, but also ensure that they can maintain a livelihood at the same time.
That's Relvi Poilapa from Voice Blongyumi in Vanuatu.
You're listening to Sisters, Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
Let's hear more about the reaction from women in the community about this law. Anne Pakoa is a prominent women's and human rights defender in Vanuatu. She is the CEO of Vanuatu Young Women for Change.
I was very annoyed, shocked, and I was actually surprised that for all this time, at this century of time, that Chiba province could come up with a bylaw like that.
This story, you know, it caught everyone's attention all the way up to the Prime Minister. Now, the Shefa provincial government has said that they will revoke the law. How do you respond to that?
I think they will do what is said, because I literally went there on Friday to speak to the deputy or to the assistant secretary general of Shewa province.
Mm.
She was shocked herself. She didn't expect those language or strong language to come out on that article. You know, she was just as shocked as everyone else. And then when I told her that, you know, as a Shifa woman, and I have a lot of Shifa women that are behind me to ask Shifa province to revoke that, she acknowledged it, and she felt terrible that that statement actually came out. And what she told me was that it wasn't supposed to come out like that, and it wasn't under their management that article came out like that. It was a document that they pulled, the council had literally pulled out. And I think the council had discussed it and took the document up to the Minister for Internal Affairs to sign it off. So to me, that was kind of a really shortcut, that if it didn't go through the current Shiva management, that is quite a shortcut. I mean, we don't do that. Obviously, yeah. We were expecting that would have gone through a formal process and that the document would have been passed it before it was actually signed off by the minister. And
as a prominent human rights defender, what did you think of the fact that it was passed without consultation?
You know, there's two things that I'm thinking of. One is that whether that's just the form of discrimination and stigma that the council wanted to lay that on as a weapon to hurt women or to discriminate women that are engaged in domestic food sales, or whether they're just being ignorant, or whether it's an influence from some individuals whose cultural protocols do not allow women to handle public food if they're menstruating.
And how vital are food stalls to women's livelihoods in Shefa province?
You know, we could say that the 20 vital markets are kind of lifesaver activities. Not just the 20 vital markets, but also the cover bars, because women who engage themselves in selling kava or selling food, in particular 20 vital food sales on the roadside, that's kind of their bread and butter pieces. They generate income to make sure that they have enough money the next day to send their kids to school. They pay for their kids' school fees and send them. They make sure that their kids have lunch packs, and they also pay the bills as well, rent houses. Some of these 20 vital businesses have actually gone beyond just microfinancing. You know, they've purchased big projects, and they've, a few women that I've known, they've actually, some of them have moved on from the 20 vital roadside sales to having other businesses like retail shops. So it's actually an important businesses for women who are unemployed in the professional sector or in the formal sector, and they decide to engage themselves in the 20 vital road sales. Now, when we look at it, a lot of these women that don't have much choices, in particular women who are at home and they don't have formal jobs, or some of them do not have the kind of like a higher education certificates to qualify them to find formal jobs. And a lot of them are like stay-at-home moms who are like, okay, when it comes to the evening, their older kids are back. They can take over childcare while they will prepare food and take it to the 20 vital sale to sell the food, but also to them, it's an opportunity for them to mingle with the other women as well. So that's like a lot of them, it's like the safe circles or the, you know, yeah, it's like the safe circles or the safe sites where they go to mingle with other women, and that's when they exchange ideas or they exchange learning, or they just, you know, talk about their days. And this is very healthy for women who are engaged in the 20 vital markets.
And in light of this, what steps do you think are needed to educate leaders and communities about menstruation or gender rights?
So I think way forward now is that we're really looking forward to Shefa Province to revoke that, but instead to look at some of the cultural, systemic and institutional strengthening and how we can strengthen these avenues for women to equally participate in income generating businesses like the 20 vital sales. And it seems like this is something that they really enjoy. So what the Shefa province should really do, and also in particular the Port Vila Municipal Council, what they should really do is to build, you know, sanitary sites where, you know, like good wash programs like clean water, toilets and enough soap and, you know, towels and stuff like that to encourage women to keep up their personal hygiene and to, if they're really worried that, you know, a lot of these women are not practicing that, then Shefa Province, the Port Vila Municipal Council, Shefa Health should really step up to ensure that there's good sanitation for women engaged in the 20 vital sales. We also should start looking out as well for women who are being discriminated against, in particular menstruating women. And like I've said, this is the first time that we've ever seen this. And to Shefa people, this is quite a backlash for us. It's like a slap on the face for what we've done so far, educating our women and making sure that our kids go to school and learn this stuff. when I was little, and also like other Sheva girls growing up, we had to go through like counseling from our mothers, our grandmothers, our aunties, where they have to educate us on what we're expecting, like, when we menstruate, what do we do? They educate us about how to use pads, the way we should clean our hands and before handling food. All this we learned from our mothers or our aunties and our grandmothers or our best friends who are older than us. And this is something that it's our tradition. It's Sheva's culture and tradition. And I also believe as well that it's other island cultures as well. But how Sheva province came up to develop a bylaw like that, I think it really draws their views backwards as to this is something that we expected back in the 80s or the 70s. It's not something that we expected in this century. So I think what we really need to do now is that the NGOs should really step up. Community health organizations should really step up, strengthen community-based education programs to ensure that there's good proper sanitation. And we talk about that women handling public food, or if they're not handling public food, but they're cooking for their families, they also have the right to be dignified during their menstruation, and that therefore they should have access to clean running water, safe water. They should have access to clean towels and sanitary pads and soap. So if these things are not accessible, then we should start looking at, you know, avenues as to how they can have access to these products. We also talk about women as well who do not have access to clean water. We talk about women who live up Ebate inland, you know, who don't have access to clean water. You know, these are the issues that we should be talking about instead of putting a bylaw that really discriminates women. We should really start looking at how do we bring water to the women, or how do we make sure that women have free sanitary pads, or how do we make sure that women have access to soap and clean water. And these are the development goal needs that we really should be looking at and discussing. Yeah.
And when you think about it, it's not just women who need to consider personal hygiene. It's everyone, isn't it, Anne?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, imagine a guy who works under the hot sun and is engaged in construction work, and he gets off the high building and goes to a roadside market to eat. He should be able to have access to a running tap and soap, to be able to wash his hands before he eats. Or if he goes to the toilet, we expect that he washes his hands with soap and that there's enough tissue for him to do whatever that he needs. But I really believe that, you know, while we have a lot of services that are already providing this kind of tools that we need to advance everybody's health and to promote people's dignities, there's still a lot of places where, you know, like eating outlets where a lot of these businesses do not really offer soap and do not offer running water and interchange. And what the Sheva province and the Port Vila municipality and the Ministry of Health should do is to carry out those health inspections to public food outlets to make sure that there's toilets, there's the toilets are clean, and that there's soap and that there's towels, and, you know, to accommodate their clients when they come to eat. They should really encourage people to wash their hands, and that there should be sanitizers in these food outlets.
That's Anne Pakoa from Vanuatu Young Women for Change. Thanks to my guests today, Anne Pakoa and Relvi Poilapa, and thank you to Pacific Beat for allowing us to replay Eggy Tupou's interview with journalist Lily Rose. While the bylaw was shocking, one thing it has achieved is starting a conversation about the very taboo topic of menstruation. The more we talk about it and eliminate the mystery behind this, the less likely it will be for women to be punished for simply having their periods. This Let's Talk is presented by me, Natasha Metten. Our supervising producer is Kim Lester. Our executive producer is Faleanga Fulu Inga Stunzna. Sisters Let's Talk is an ABC Radio Australia production. We acknowledge the Yagara, Turrbal and Darumbal peoples on whose land this program is produced. Emta Sol na Lukimu next time.